It seems incredible, but in India, which is reeling from more than 7 million COVID infections this year, one organisation has served more than 1 million meals to those in need in Mumbai, many of them street children. Bridget Leslie speaks with Vision Rescue's Biju Tumpi, but first, this audio introduction before Bridget's interview.
For many living in the slums, there is a slum mentality that this is the only way of life with no escape. And their children have no other choice but to follow the same path. They are put to work, left to raise their siblings, married off young, or left prey to being trafficked into domestic service or prostitution. But that doesn't have to be the story. And we know that when you educate a child, then you give them the power of choice and can set them on a different path. Our thought was simple. If you can't get the people off the streets, if you can't get the people out of the slums, then get the slums out of the people. Our approach had to be innovative. We thought, why not use buses to go into slums to deliver a feeding program where it's needed most, and then use that as a way to deliver a basic education program. So that's exactly what we did. And today, we cook and deliver a daily meal, 5 days a week, to over 2,000 children in some of India's poorest slums. Once children are fed, you can feed their minds. And we use the buses as mobile classrooms, providing children the basic building blocks of education to help them develop the confidence and skills to move on to formal education.
Hi, Bridget. How are you doing?
Thank you. Biju Tumpi, nice to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, absolutely. And how is quarantine going?
Well, the lockdown has, we've been unlocking for the last few months. So we are on unlock 4.0 right now, or even 5.0. So pretty much everything is functioning as usual. All the shops are open. Malls are open, movie theaters are not open yet, but public gatherings like places of worship not fully open. So, you know, the government is slowly opening up with restrictions.
It's progress.
Yeah, it's progress, but still, we still have a lot of cases here, and the number of COVID cases are still rising every day on one hand. Yeah.
And speaking about quarantine and COVID, 1 million meals served during COVID. How did that happen? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, it happened. We didn't plan to do it that way. You know, as you know, we work in slum communities with children, freeing children from exploitation. And when the lockdown happened, of course, you know, all our staff had to work from home. We could not go out. We could not travel. And so we began to communicate with our volunteers in these slum communities and find out about what's happening in those communities. And one of our volunteers told us about 17 families in her region who were going into starvation, because the people that we are working with, they are all daily wage laborers. That means if they don't work today, they don't eat tomorrow and the next couple of days. So we thought we'll put together a grocery kit, like rice, lentils, you know, coffee powder, oil, a few things, and give it to these 17 families, which would last them about 8 to 10 days, family of five. So we gave it to them. Then we heard about a few more people. They would tell us about more people who would go into starvation. So it started like that. So we didn't have the funding for it. We didn't have, you know, we just started off, and I don't know, it just happened.
That's fantastic. And how did you feel serving that 1 millionth meal? I saw your post on Facebook.
I felt very, very grateful that we were able to do that, because, you know, when I saw people's faces and they came up to me and said thank you, if it was not for you, I don't know. We don't know what we would have done. You know, we would have starved.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't put a price tag to that. You can't put words to how you feel when somebody comes up to you and says that.
It's fantastic. I want to take a minute here and just say hi to everyone who's joined us. I'm sure a lot of your supporters are on today as well. Want to say hello to Joe, Ashok, and Natik. And we've got Maria from Sydney and Cyrus and Mama Spice from France who's joined us. Hello. Nice to see you. So
hello, everybody.
People from around. Okay.
Welcome.
Everyone's eager to hear you today, Biju, and we've got a good few questions for you too. If you have questions for Biju, put them in the comment section and I'll read them out to him as we go along. Nothing's out of our remit here, so please do go from leadership to work on Vision Rescue itself. He can answer all questions, right?
I'll try. Thanks, Biju.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Nothing like putting you on the spot, Biju.
That's right.
I want to ask.
Good morning here in Mumbai. It must be afternoon in Sydney, right?
Yes, to 1:30 p.m. here. We're linking Sydney with Mumbai today, and it's still early hours. The time difference isn't awful between us, between the both countries, so we're still doing well here. I want to ask you a question. I read an article this week from the BBC website, and they spoke about Diwali, one of the Mumbai camps. I think you'll know the area.
Dharavi.
And one of the article's main points was that because of community action, they've actually managed to contain the spread of coronavirus. You work on the ground in Mumbai every day. Yeah. What's your thoughts on what's happening between those communities?
So when you look at a slum community, there are a lot of things that they don't have. You know, they don't have proper electricity, they don't have running water, they don't have proper sanitation or, you know, toilets, things like that. But one thing that they do have is very strong communities because the walls are very thin, you know. So the whole community functions, the ecosystem functions in a very community-centered manner. So, for example, if I don't have milk in my house, I'll just knock your door. And if you don't have sugar in your house, you knock my door and we share. So that element of sharing is very, very strong within slum communities. But when COVID happened, you know, one of the danger is also they live very close by and, you know, they don't have toilet. A lot of them don't have toilets. They have public toilets. So 1,440 people would be using one toilet block, an average. So how do you do physical distancing? How do you stop this? But having said that, during COVID times, Dharavi, initially it was a nightmare, but there are so many clinics within that Dharavi slum community. And doctors, nurses, health workers, initially, even though they were seen as people who were a threat to their whole community aspect of their existence, people soon got an idea that they were there to help them and cooperated with them and was able to contain it pretty soon.
That's fantastic. And I watch the news here. We're actually getting an international perspective on what's happening with COVID around the various countries of the world. India has the highest infection rate right now for coronavirus.
That's right.
So let me ask you, what's going wrong from your perspective?
A lot of things. A lot of things. From the beginning itself, I mean, people keep bringing up different reasons of why it is going wrong, because different people have different perspectives. Somebody says the timing of the lockdown was wrong. Somebody says the timing of the unlock was wrong. The government infrastructure wasn't enough. All those reasons are there, but you need to remember that India is a nation of 1.3 plus billion people. And so lockdown, the kind of lockdown that was prescribed or suggested for India, it's just not practical because people will just go into starvation. So people began to get out and people began to move around. People began to travel. And so you can't stop that from happening. So it began to spread, and people began to panic also. When the lockdown first happened, there was a lot of panic among people. I don't know, you would have seen on news, people, millions and millions of people were traveling from cities, migrant workers, back to their villages. So a lot of them actually carried this virus from the cities or from the towns where they were working to the rural villages as well. You know, so that is how the spread began to happen.
Now, I know one thing that's going right. Vision Rescue is still operating during COVID, still on the ground.
Yeah.
Tell me about Vision Rescue and about your initiatives and programs.
Yeah. So Vision Rescue exists to free children from exploitation. So if you look at India, the demography, India is probably India is the youngest nation in the world. But at the same time, we have more than 500 million people who are living in less than $2 a day in India. And there are children growing up in these environments. So the reason why these children have become victims of exploitation caused by poverty is because of wrong choices made by somebody along the line, their parents or grandparents. So why would they make a wrong choice? They made a wrong choice because for you to be able to make a choice, you need to be aware of options. Okay, they were not aware of options because they did not have access to information. That's because they were not educated. So Vision Rescue's modus operandi, or our way of freeing children from exploitation, is by bringing education to them. Once we bring education to them, we give them access to information. Once we give them access to information, they become aware of choices. They become aware of options out of which they can make a good life choice. And their children will not end up on the streets. So it's not a quick fix model. So our model is not getting the children out of the slums. Our model is to get the slum out of the children.
That's fantastic. I was looking at your website a few weeks back, and one of the videos I was listening to was about a little girl who was so grateful that she got education finally through the bus program. Tell me about that initiative. How do you impact young girls through these programs? And the reason I ask is because it is a pain point in India, this issue of gender equity and girl empowerment.
Very, very true. Especially when you go to slums or rural villages. I mean, recently, I don't know if you've been following, we've been having a series of cases of rape happening in different states, especially the northern states of India. And more than 87 rapes are reported every day, and most of them goes unreported. And one of the main reason is because how people see women. Because of, especially in rural India. So women are, a lot of times women are seen as the lesser person, or they are seen as less powerful, and women are not given enough prominence. Education of the girl child is not given enough prominence. If there is a boy and a girl, of course, people would give priority to the boy. A lot of times a girl child is seen as a liability. And this is not because people are bad. This is just because people are not educated. Again, if the parents were educated, when I say education, I don't mean just mere academics. I believe education is holistic, the complete transformation in the way you see people, the way you see life. You're only educated once you begin to see people for who they are worth. People see people for the real value that they have. And when that is brought, people begin to say this, change the way they think.
Bridget Leslie was speaking with Biju Thumpi of Vision Rescue India. You can listen next week, where we'll continue with part 2.